But why don't we spend 3% on advertising and marketing and get them the front door, then 3% on patient loyalty programs to keep them from going out the back door?
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Many of you will know that I recently had the pleasure of being interviewed by Howard Foran for his podcast, Dentistry Uncensored. So in this particular episode of the Savvy Dentist Podcast, it's the return event. In this particular episode, I get to ask Howard the questions instead. Many of you, of course, will know Howard as the founder of Dental Town. He is the CEO of Hygiene Town, Ortho Town, as well as having his own practice. He is really well known in the dental profession and the dental industry. His recent book, Uncomplicate Business, is a fantastic book. It's a number one bestseller. And in today's episode, we're going to be unpacking some of the things that go into creating a simple yet highly profitable practice. We're going to cover, understanding finances. We're going to talk about building a great team. We're going to be talking about the role of corporate dentistry and where does that fit in and how independent practice owners can, continue to thrive in the changing environment. Howard is a wealth of information and he brings 29 years of experience and insight to this interview. And I'm really, really pleased that he's taking the time to share with us. Now, on a separate note, if you haven't had the opportunity to go back and listen to the episode last week with James Schremko, I'm really going to implore you to go back and have a listen to that as well, because James drops a lot of really good, solid nuggets of information into that interview. And so it's really worth listening and taking some good notes around that as well. So this interview, as I said, is a bit with Howard Foran, and I really hope you enjoy it. Please, again, do take some notes on this one as well, because, again, you'll be wanting to put this stuff into action to get your practice going in the direction that you're looking to take it. So have a great week, and without any further ado, here's Howard Foran. Howard Foran, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks for making the time all the way from Phoenix in Arizona. It must be about lunchtime on Saturday at your place. Is that correct?
It is. It is lunchtime on Saturday. What time is it in Australia?
Well, it's about 6:30 in the morning on Sunday.
I love Australia. I've lectured there several times, and my brother moved there from Kansas a couple of years ago, and everybody's saying, when are you coming back? And he said, you can't move from Kansas to Sydney, then go back. It's a one-way, and it's the only city I lecture in where every time I get on the airplane, I don't want to go back home. I want to live in Sydney. I mean, that is, man, what a great civilization you guys got there.
Oh, thank you so much, Howard. Well, I can tell you that Sydney would welcome you with open arms, so please do feel free to come and either visit or stay. Mate, we'd love to have you here. Howard, I wanted to just start by asking about your book, Uncomplicate Business. It's a fantastic read. So firstly, congratulations on putting the book together. As someone who's authored a book as well, I know just how much work has gone into this book. It's a very weighty tome, and it's full of really good insights and pieces of information for anyone in business. But the title intrigues me. It's called Uncomplicate Business. And the title makes me think that perhaps you're thinking that we do overcomplicate things. And I'm wondering, why is it that we as humans, and particularly as dentists, why do we have this tendency to overcomplicate stuff?
Keep it simple, stupid. I mean, it's just so simple. It's like one of the biggest rules in advertising. I mean, the first thing they say in advertising is that half my advertising works great and half of it doesn't work, but I don't know which half is what. And the second rule of advertising is, every company that has an amazing ad and it's doing great, but they're a monkey, so they have to be productive. They have to work on it, so they're always changing it. And rule number one is, if you have an ad that works, don't touch it. Don't change it. It's like politicians. They go to the government and they think, well, if I want to get something done, I got to pass a big bill and a big regulation because now I feel like I did something. And the truth of the matter is, usually it's the wrong thing. And if they just would have, if you just have a government do nothing, it would probably be the best government in the world.
Just get out of the way, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. So one of the things that, I'm sure the listeners will be thinking about is, we understand that we should keep things simple, stupid. But if I found myself in a bit of a tangle and all of a sudden I'm either in practice or in business or doing whatever in my life and things have suddenly become complicated, What advice do you have for someone to try and get back to simplicity?
So what I did in my book is I've had a monthly column in my magazine, Dental Town, since 1994. And then all of a sudden, my oldest boy, Eric, I had four boys, Eric, Greg, Ryan, and Zach, they're 27, 25, 23, 21, made me a granddaughter. And I was looking at this granddaughter and I was realizing that I don't remember my grandparents because my dad died at 60 and both of my grandfathers died at 60. I was 50 looking at little Taylor and I thought, hell, I'll probably be dead when she's 10. And I want to write little Taylor everything I learned in business. I didn't know what business she'd be in. So I laid out every column I'd ever written and I took out root canals, fillings, and crowns in dentistry because I didn't know if she'd own a restaurant, a dry cleaner. I didn't know what she'd do. And it just, and I looked at that and it just comes down to, you know, people, time, and money. And if you, I don't care if you have a football team, a soccer team, a cricket team. I mean, if you have the best players, you're going to win. Time management is as important as money management. And then money was the third part. And it's just so simple. And the technology's always changed, but the people doesn't. I look at the internet and it's not even a big change. I mean, it started with the telegraph, which then morphed into a telephone. And then they used the exact same wire for the internet. I mean, you could say the telephone was the telegraph 2.0 and the internet was a telegraph 3.0. So technology changes, but the people don't change. Your customer doesn't change. So if you can just keep one eye on the customer and one eye on cost and use your 3.5-pound brain to drive down costs so your customer has the freedom to afford what you sell and you make everything faster, easier, cheaper, higher quality, more miniature, everything just gets better. And my classic example of how major companies can't do this is look at the remote control. I mean, no, I've never met anybody on the planet that can run a remote control because when they go to make the remote control, every group of programmers from VCR to cable to TV, everybody shows up with all their buttons and they cram all those buttons. And companies that are great like Amazon and Google, they say, no, that we just keep our eye on the customer. And we're only going to have three buttons for the customer. And you go right, left, forward, whatever. And if you just keep your eye on the customer, I don't care if you're selling them a root canal, a hamburger, a pizza, what is your customer? That human is not going to be much different 100,000 years from now. Their needs and wants aren't going to be much different 100,000 years from now. So just work hard to give them what they need faster, easier, cheaper, lower cost, more miniature. Just keep your eye on the customer.
That's fantastic advice, Howard. And I think obviously we're trying to make sure that we meet the customer's needs. One of the questions that comes up regularly when I'm lecturing is when you're doing your advertising, your marketing, who do I target? And one of the common challenges that I find dentists facing in Australia, I don't know whether it's something that happens in the United States as well, but when you ask a dentist who their customer is, it's almost anyone who fogs a mirror. But I have a view that, you know, we can't be all things to all people. Do you have a view around that? And how does that flow into your marketing? How does that flow into how you focus on the customer?
Well, you know, if you go back to 1900 in the United States, healthcare was 1% of the economy. And they had no specialists. One doctor did everything. And by the end of the century, 2000, healthcare was 14% of the economy. And the physicians had 58 specialties. The dentists had 9. Now we're at 2017. This is the first time Americans will spend over $3 trillion on healthcare. So when dentists are saying, well, I want to add sleep apnea or Invisalign, my first question is, well, what are you going to take away? And they don't have any takeaways. They're trying to be all things, all people. It's like, well, I want to master sleep apnea and Invisalign and place implants and children and cosmetics. And so then I say, okay, so you believe the last 117 years of economic history was wrong, that we shouldn't have 58 specialties in medicine and 9 in dentistry? You believe that there's this Superman, Wonder Woman doctor who does your ear, nose, and throat, does your bypass, treats your chemo? I mean, my friends that do eyes, I mean, some of them only do the retina of the eye. Some only do glaucoma of the eye. So the Superman theory of all things to all people, A, it doesn't work. B, it drives their overhead up. They're spending enormous amounts of money in continuing education and equipment and all this stuff because they don't know who their customer is.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think, moving on from the customer second, I want to just focus on some trends at the moment as well, because, you mentioned that, in the 117 years, of medicine and all the rest of it, there's been some rapid change. But you graduated, I think, from university in 1987. Is that correct?
Correct.
So, speaking of the changes in healthcare, what do you think have been the biggest trends that have affected your practicing life thus far?
Wow, there's so many trends, Well, first of all, when I got out of school, demographics is huge. I mean, you got to know your demographics, even for marketing. Like, who cares if you practice in Sydney? I'd want to know what your 3-mile radius is. You might find out that there's a big population of people who speak Vietnamese or Laos or Cambodian. And I know dentists who really, really focused on their demographics. And like one dentist I know found out that there was 4,000 people living within 5 miles of his office that spoke Portuguese from Brazil. And he actually went back to school and learned Portuguese. But the demographics when I got out of school was the baby boomer. That was the big thing. And the baby boomers, we in dentistry had this technological revolution in dental materials where we were going from amalgam and gold to all this tooth-colored bleaching bonding veneers. So the first 20 years of my practice, from 87 to probably 2000, was the dental materials revolution. And we're taking out silver and gold stuff and replacing them with tooth-colored stuff, bleaching, bonding, veneers. And then 2000, the dental materials revolution just kind of plateaued, and it's just incremental improvements. Then we had the digital revolution, where everything was going from analog to digital, from impressions to optical scanning to film x-ray to digital x-ray. And that was a big marketing thing, because when the consumer walks in there and they have to, we sell the invisible. So we're in a trust-based, relationship-oriented thing. If pharmacy, if I need 20 tabs of penicillin in France, they'll just go to an ATM machine, stick in their medical card, and get 28 tabs from an ATM machine, just like you get cash. There's no really trust relationship. But if I go to Australia or Canada or the United States and I tell 100 women, and women make 91% of all healthcare appointments in America because they have maternal instincts. In the animal kingdom, male animals routinely eat their children, lions, tigers, polar bears. So this is a female industry. They're obsessed. Women are obsessed with healthcare and education for their offspring, the number one goal of a species. And if you tell 100 women, your air conditioner doesn't work, and the air conditioner repairman just showed up and said it can't be fixed, you need a whole new air conditioner. 100 out of 100 women will say, I don't believe you, Jesse. I think you're just trying to sell me a new air conditioner. If they take their car into the shop to get an oil change, they say, we change the oil, but you need to change and all these belts and transmission fluids and all that. 100 out of 100 women will say, I don't even trust you. So when you go to dentistry and you say, okay, I found this little flyer coupon, I can come in and for $99 get a clean exam and x-ray. Then Dr. Jesse walks in and says, you have 4 cavities and they're $250 each and I need $1,000. That woman's going to think, that's why you did a $99 cleaning. I don't trust you. So you have to sell the invisible. When I check into a hotel, the reason the maid put a cardboard slip around the toilet seats because she didn't see me. I didn't see her clean the toilet. She's selling the invisible. When you get a drink from the bar, they'll leave a half inch of straw paper on it just to let you know, dude, this is a clean operation. That's a new straw. We didn't use it. So the technology revolution was really imperative in dentistry, because when mom walked into your office and she saw the digital x-rays on a big screen and she saw the intraoral camera and she saw the doctor entering the notes on a wireless laptop, typing them in a seat, she just thought, wow, you seem like you're from Star Wars. So it was a help in a decision-making deal that you look like you know what you're doing. This place looks really, really high tech. So I'm going to do that. So, and now I would say that in the last 5 years, we've seen a social media revolution. And I understand social media. I started Dental Town in 98 and Facebook didn't start till 94. So I beat Facebook by 6 years on social media. And now the social media is a huge revolution in marketing. And I want to go back to the Sapien. And that is, we know from data that when Sapien comes to your office just on marketing, they'll spend $1. When they're referred from a friend, they'll spend $3, because you're not selling an iPhone. You're not selling a Starbucks coffee. You're not selling something where the consumer can instantly decide, if this is a quality product for the price I'm paying. They don't know if they need a new transmission. They don't know if that air conditioner can just have a shot of Freon or if I need a whole new AC. They don't know why what the difference between an MOD filling and a root canal buildup and crown, or they don't know any of this stuff. So like on Facebook, on Facebook marketing, when patients come in to get a cleaning, a lot of people just give them a toothbrush. I'd rather give them a toothbrush if they checked in on Facebook, because the average Facebook users, 1.3 billion users, and the average Facebook female has 140 friends, which is so biologically significant, because when you study Sapien for the last 2 million years and you study the findings of Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon and Peking Man and the paleontologists, they all had said for years that the average herd of Sapien was about 140. So this 140 is so significant because it shows up in two very distinct types of research: social media, anthropology. So this female who's making 91% of your appointments, she'll go through her life and she doesn't care that the Earth has 66 million new babies a year, that we're going to pass 4.5 billion people here before the end of the year. Her whole life is going to be lived and died and played out with about 140 people. And some of those people she'll talk to daily. Some of those people she might only see every 3 or 4 years, but when she sees them, it's like she just saw them yesterday. So that's her herd. So when she's looking at Facebook and she says, wow, my friend Mary Lou just checked in to Dr. Jesse Green. Wow, well, my friend Mary Lou, she's smart and I trust her. And now I text her, hey, you just went into Dr. Jesse Green. I got two girls that are 10 and 12. Is he good with? And then she's like, oh, yeah, he's great. He's great. So now when she walks in there, that whole non-trust is gone. So now she walks in there, she trusts you. She sees the digital revolution. She sees the intro cameras. She sees the digital x-rays. She sees long-term staff. You know, it's very imperative that Mary Lou says, oh, yeah, Susan is the hygienist, and she's been cleaning my teeth for 10 years. That's relationship-based. That's trust-based. So now when the doctor says, you need two cavities, now she instantly internalizes. So now it's no longer, I don't trust you. Now she's like, yeah, well, you know, I never floss. I know I don't floss. I mean, you know, I'm always telling myself, when I was driving to the dentist, I was flossing my teeth the entire way. I was trying to make up for 1 year of not flossing my teeth. So then when the dentist speaks terms and says, yeah, these cavities are in between your teeth where the floss goes, you know, where your toothbrush goes, you don't have a single cavity. It looks like you're a good brusher, but in between your teeth where the floss goes, you have two cavities. So she trusts you. Now she's looking at the man in the mirror, not looking at the dentist standing there with a mirror and an Explorer in his hand. And it's I'd say the biggest game changer now is probably been social media.
That's a massively insightful value bomb we've just dropped there, Howard. And for anyone listening there, I hope you've been taking notes madly, because what Howard's touched on there is a couple of really key shifts over the period of time, and also a glimpse into the future, because social media is going to be critical. I'm also really curious to explore other trends around the business of dentistry as well. What we're seeing here in Australia, and I'm sure this is replicated elsewhere in the world, that, you know, we've got more dentists than ever before graduating from more dental schools than we've ever had before. We've got the health insurance companies, you know, really being involved in the provision of dental care. We've got roll-up of practices through corporatization, and we're finding that, you know, there's a whole lot of dentists who are either underemployed, meaning they're not getting enough work or as much work as they'd like, and even some that are unemployed. So what would you say to, you know, someone who's a dental student in their final year of university and they're getting ready to graduate into this environment? What sort of advice would you have for those guys?
Okay, well, I two things come to mind first. Okay, so we talked about 1900, there were no specialists. And by 2000, there were 58. When I got out of school 29 years ago, there were no accounting specialists in dentistry. And every, you know, 40,000 accountants service 211,000 dentists. So every accountant only had a couple of dentists. And after you got done talking to them, they talked to a dry cleaner, a restaurant. It was crazy. What we've seen in America is two accounting firms pop up. One has 2,000 dentists as customers. One has 8,000. And this specialty, you know, people, time, and money is what we have in healthcare. The biggest problem is the dentists don't know their numbers. So they'll sign up for 10 different insurance schemes. And then I'll say, well, how much do you charge for a filling? And he'll say $250. And I'll say, okay, dude, that's your cash price. And you're only charging that 18% of the time. But 82% of the time, you're charging 8 different fees depending on all these insurance schemes. So my question to you is, how much does that filling cost you? And they never know their cost. And if you can't break it down by the cost, you can at least break it down by the cost of your day. What is your break-even point for the day? But what we've seen is when dentists switch to an accounting firm that only does dentists, and this accountant all day long is working with, you know, 100, 150, 200 dentists, they just know all the numbers. They say, well, you know, the people doing Medicaid, you know, if they do amalgam fillings and they only schedule a half hour, they're making bank. But you go into some high-end cosmetic dentist where a barrel of oil in my lifetime ranges between $20 and $100 a barrel. A barrel of bonding agent in dentistry is over $1 million a barrel. So if you signed up for this Medicaid scheme and you're going to charge, take an hour of labor and do aesthetic bonding dentistry, you're going to lose $23 on every filling you do. And these dentists never know their math. So if you can get the dentist, and same thing with the practice manager, like in America, the biggest practice management softwares out there, they're not attached to an accounting package. So they can do their scheduling, the insurance billing, but they have no accounting. They have no payables, receivables. Their number one cost used to be, when I got out of school, it was labor. When I got out of school, labor was about 25%, overhead was 50%. Now you see labor 28% and overhead 65%, because the largest cost in a dental office in America today doesn't even show up on an accounting statement, on a profit or loss statement of income, or your balance sheet, or your statement of cash flow. And that is the adjusted production off these insurance plans, where you normally charge a dollar for this, but you signed up for an insurance scheme, and the average PPO, preferred provider organization in America, is about a 40% reduction in fee. So the average 211,000 dentist, their number one cost is about across the board is about a 25% fee adjustment, because they've signed up for these insurance plans, which are basically nothing more than a volume discount. So Jesse walks in cash, I charge him a dollar, but I sign up with this insurance plan because they're going to send me 50 patients, but I've agreed to do everything 40% less, and they don't even know that they don't even have a 40% profit margin to start with. So then you can't do it in an hour. You got to do it faster. You got to do it in a half hour. I understand everything's got to be tooth colored for the woman, because women really value aesthetics. But what about restorations on molars on boys? In fact, the largest amalgam company in the world is actually in Melbourne, Australia. It's called SDA, correct?
Yeah, Southern Dental Industries.
Yeah, and these dentists say, well, I don't believe in amalgam. Well, what do you not believe in amalgam? Average amalgam lasts 38 years. Average composite lasts 6 years. Now, if mom wants to come in and pay a great fee and you do this and it takes longer and you make money, that's amazing. Sydney's amazing. But if you signed an insurance scheme that's half the price, You got it. The only secret to lower price is lower cost. So if you just lower your prices for the customers, but you don't lower your cost, that's called a bankruptcy. Or what you're doing is you're taking profit from other patients and you're subsidizing other patients that you're doing at a loss. So I would say find an accounting that's specialized. If you can't find one, then what I would do is I would look in your family tree, your social network, your church, whatever, and I'd find an accountant and I would have them get on Dentaltown and look at how this business model is amazing. Because in some countries I've listened to, a dentist had a sister that was an accountant and went to a sister and said, okay, here's what you're going to do. We're only going to do dentists. And they start advertising to all the dentists saying, I'm only doing dentists. And they have just exploded, because dentists and physicians do not know their cost. I don't care if you do knees. If you walk up to the doctor and say, how much you charge for an artificial knee? And they'll say this. I'll say, what's your overhead? And they'll tell you the price of the knee titanium implant. It's like, well, what about labor, the hospital, the anesthesia? What is the total cost of this knee? You'll never find a doctor that knows their total overhead. So that's huge. Now, I want to go back to corporate dentistry. Can I rant about that for a few minutes?
Go for it. You rant away.
Corporate dentistry, it's fun. You know, the advantage of being 54 is you don't see anything for the first time. So when I got out of school in 87, 29 years ago, there was orthodontic centers had rolled up a bunch of orthodontic offices. They were made it to the New York Stock Exchange at $1 billion valuation, and I watched it completely implode. And at that same time, there were a dozen on NASDAQ. They all imploded. They disappeared for 10 years. So everybody forgot all the lessons they learned the first time, and now they're back. But notice Wall Street didn't forget, because Wall Street knows their math. They know their numbers. They didn't forget the lessons. What it was is the orthodontic centers of America went to Wall Street and got a $100 million line of credit, and then they realized there's all these orthodontists had these practices doing $2, $3, $4 million a year that were illiquid assets, because you can't sell a $2, $3, $4 million practice some kid walking out of ortho school. So they would buy them up. Well, here's the key. They said, okay, you had to stay here exactly 3 years. Well, every doctor quit the hour they were free. At 3 years, they all walked. No one stayed with the dental services organization, because managing dentists and lawyers and physicians is like herding cats. They're not pack animals. They don't agree on anything. If you want to get a bunch of people to join an army, you need a bunch of boys under 21, because those are the only ones that will take orders. By the time they have 8 years of college and get to be 35, and you said, okay, you need to take that hill, they'd say, no, I'm not taking that hill. There's gunfire coming over that hill, and I'm going to get shot. What are you, a moron? So dentists, physicians, lawyers, they don't take orders. It's herding cats. It's a disaster. So then what happens is the older guy who's 60, as soon as he could walk, he would walk, and then they'd replace him with some 25-year-old punk out of school. When the numbers showed, it takes about 7 years out of school to ramp up to where you can take over somebody selling you their practice. So they all went under. Now they're back, but look at how they grow. They buy a practice for $1 million, then they say, oh, we went from zero to $1 million. Yeah, so did your debt sheet. And then they buy 10 practices in $1 million each, and now they say, now we've grown from $1 million to $10 million. Yeah, so is your debt sheet. You know, I will not take corporate dentistry serious until just one of them, just one, can do an IPO on NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange. And a lot of people say, oh, well, this one's publicly traded in Singapore or Australia, around the world. Yeah, because they didn't learn the lesson 30 years ago. So it'll be a onesie. So what is the real issue? The real issue is this. You know, the average patient gets their teeth cleaned for an hour twice a year. So if a hygienist works Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, 40 hours a week, 50 weeks in a year, give her 2 weeks vacation, she can only work 2,000 hours a year. So she cleans 1,000 people for an hour, and then they come back the second half of the year, and she cleans them all for another hour. So you take the average dentist getting 25 new patients. Well, that means every 2.5 years, you'd have another 1,000 patients. You'd add another full-time hygienist. But you go to every dental office in America as a hygienist, and you come back 25 months later, 2.5 years later, 25 new patients a month, they don't add another hygienist. You come back 10 years later, they only have one hygienist. 20 years later, only one hygienist. 30 years later, only one hygienist. Now they've been practicing from age 25 to 65. They're in a town of 5,000. They still only have one hygienist, and they're looking at you saying, how should I market? I need some new patients. Like, dude, you've gone through every single person in this town. When are you going to start trying to keep a customer for life? And then you go to corporate dentistry, and some of the biggest chains in America can't even keep their dentist for a year. Are you kidding me? So you are worried about a dental office who can't even keep a dentist for a year? I mean, it is a joke. So if you look at a dam, you look at the Hoover Dam by Las Vegas, you got this little Colorado River coming down. They built this dam. They shut the back door. They kept patients for life. They kept water for life. And that lake is so big, you can't swim across it. And then when I got out of school, advertising was taboo. Doctors didn't do it. And by 10 years out, they were saying, well, maybe we should do it. Maybe we spend 3%. Now, 30 years later, they're saying you should spend 5 to 7% on advertising. And then 82% of dentists said, well, I'm going to get a volume discount and sign up with these insurance schemes with a 40% discount. And I'm like, okay, well, first of all, 1/3 of America doesn't even have insurance. Why? If you don't even blink when someone sends you a contract to do all the dentistry 40% off. Well, why don't you spend 5% on advertising to go get this 1/3 of America that just comes in and pays 40% more on fees? And then instead of spending 5% on advertising, some are saying 5 to 7%. Let's bust that in half. Let's say it's 6%. Let's take the mean, 6. But why don't we spend 3% on advertising and marketing and get them the front door, then 3% on patient loyalty programs to keep them from going out the back door? You know, someone will call you and say, well, do you have nitrous oxide? The doctor's like, no, I don't do that. Well, can you put me to sleep? No, I don't do that. Are you open early morning, evenings? No. The wand will come out with a painless injection. No, I'm not spending $3,000 on that. Oh, you won't spend $3,000 on that, but you'll spend $10,000 on advertising and you'll sign up on a 40% PPO plan, why don't we try to find out when patients come in, the first thing the dentist says is, have you ever had herpes, syphilis, gonorrhea? Why don't you know, those are questions you ask in a bar. Why don't you ask,
I don't know what class you got here, mate.
Why did you leave your last dentist? What did you like the most about your last dentist? Well, he was open, you know, I'm in a small company. Right now about 46% of America works for a company with 1,000 employees or more. So they got health insurance and they got dental and they can leave to go to the dentist. But 54% work for smaller companies, and the average size of that smaller company is only about 25 people or less, and they're not allowed to leave to go get a cleaning. So half of the working class cannot go to the dentist from 8 to 5. So I'll say to the dentist, well, you're still spending advertising. You haven't added a hygienist in 30 years. Your hours are Monday through Thursday, 8 to 4. I mean, it's a joke. Why don't you open up at 6 and work till 2 on Mondays and Tuesdays? And then Wednesdays and Thursdays, why don't you come in at 10 and work till 6? Why don't you do one Saturday a month? And they'll say no. And you'll say, well, why don't you have nitrous oxide? No. Staff turnover is lethal because it's all about trust. So how come every time I go in, you have different staff? I mean, every time the lady cleans my teeth, it's a different person. How come nobody stays in this office? And these big corporate, I mean, they come into me and they say, well, the doctor, I went in there and they gave me a $5,000 treatment plan. And I thought about it for about 6 months. And I thought, well, I'm going to go back and talk to him about it. And it turned out he's not even there. And then some new guy came in and gave me a $3,000 treatment plan. And it's like, and the girl that I met at the front the first time I went in there is Valerie. And when I came back, I said, where's Valerie? Does she not work today? And they're like, Valerie, oh, she quit a long time ago. So then the staff says, well, I've been with you for a long time and I'm really good. And I'm really good at patient. I have a dollar raise. You're like, no, I'm not giving you a dollar raise. I'm not going to keep patient retention. I'm not going to keep customers for life. I'm not going to keep staff for life. I'm going to put all my money in new patients and advertising and marketing and just have a burn and churn factory. That's all corporate dentistry is. Corporate dentistry is a joke. It has a function. It's liquidity for old guys like me who can't sell their practice, and they create jobs for young dentists because the existing dentists are too crazy to realize that they paid the rent, mortgage, equipment bill, that computer, insurance, malpractice. They paid all their bills to cover 168 hours in a week, and they're only open 32 hours a week. So they're only open 19% of the week. They don't even have a digital phone system that can track how many people called. When you go into a dental office and they only have an answering machine that dates all the way back to the telegraph and the telephone, and it's only there if someone wants to leave a message. But Sapien doesn't talk to boxes. They don't talk to trees. Sapien only talks to people and occasionally dogs and cats. It takes about 13 calls to an answering machine for one to leave a message. And that's usually some crazy older lady with cats and a martini in her hand. And so you put a digital phone system in there and you start looking and saying, wow, half of our incoming calls come in and we're not even open. And we're open Monday through Thursday, 8 to 5. And they start calling at 6. And then we close at 5 and put on the answering machine, which never has a message, and they're still calling till 6:30. So what I'm going to do is I got two girls up front that come in 8 to 5. I'm going to have one come in at 6, go to lunch 11 to 1 and stay till 2. I'm going to have the other one come in at 9:30, take lunch separately, 6:30. So I'm going to double the funnel, the opening of the funnel. I'll tell you this on any business. I don't care if you deliver pizza. I don't care if you sell root canal. I don't care what you sell. If you sell pizza and you double the number of incoming calls that say, hey, I want a pepperoni pizza, what will happen to your pizza sales?
Oh, they're going to have to increase by definition.
Yeah. So when you go into this office and you don't have to double the hours of producing the pizza, you just got to double the funnel of listening calls. And if every single call that comes in gets answered by a long-term staff who's trained with continuing education and they know what they're talking about, the front desk answers at least half the questions ever. And you go into the average dental office and it usually takes about three, depending on whose data you like, it takes between three strange new numbers that are not in your system to get one scheduled patient in the chair, all the way to 4. So then if you focus, that's why you see in dental practice management that when the dentist comes alone, if you go in the seminar, half the room, the dentist comes alone, and you go find out how much each one of them makes, they make half as much as the other half of the dentist who brought their entire staff. So the doctor that comes alone is saving money because he doesn't even have any money. But the doctor that brings the whole staff realizes that I don't want to sit there and learn about root canals, implants, and gum disease all day, because I'm not even going to answer half the questions are going to be answered by Shawanda at the front desk. And then when they come in and get a teeth cleaning, the hygienist might answer the next 30% of the questions. And then when I see the patient with the assistant, I'll tell them something and say, do you have any questions? And I'll say, no, I leave the room. And they immediately turn to the dental assistant and say, hey, what about this or that? So the intelligent dentist knows that you need patients and staff for life. You need long-term staff to build trusting relationships with your patients. And you take all your staff to the CE, and not just practice management, endo, perio, pedo, because when that grandma calls up and says, well, I can't get an implant because of this and that, then your receptionist and they're saying, oh, well, actually you can, and this and that. And they need to be the most informed. That's why online CE, you know, Dental Town, we put up 350 courses and they're like, you know, $20 each, and they're great for staff meetings. Because, and if the dentist doesn't even want to do it, I don't care if they don't do it, just have your receptionist do it. Because I know if you double the number of calls coming in, you'll double your business. And it's very culture. Like in Arizona, I can call the Italian pizzerias, they'll deliver pizza to my house. I can call any Chinese restaurant, they'll deliver the Chinese to my house. There's not a single Mexican restaurant in Arizona that would deliver Mexican food to your house. It's just culture. The Mexicans won't do it. The Chinese and the Italians will. Same thing with doctors. When you get out of medical school, you'll get a job at a hospital and they'll say, okay, I want you to work a 24-hour shift on Monday from 6 a.m. to the next day at 6 a.m. And then Thursday, you're going to do it again 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. So you'll work two 24-hour days, and that'll be 48 hours for the week. Then a dentist comes in. Instead of getting off at 5, I want you to work till 7 and every other Saturday. What? Are you kidding me? I'm a Mexican. I won't deliver. You're thinking I'm Chinese. So a lot of what we believe is just myth. It's culture. It's custom. It's tradition. It's crazy. But just keep one eye on the customer. Use your brain to drive down costs until your customer has the freedom to afford what you have to sell, make it convenient, get to yes. Does your receptionist track to no's? Do they come back in the month and say, you know, sometimes dentists will call me and they say, do you think I should take this insurance scheme? It's like, dude, I need data. Did one person a year ask you this? One person a month? One person a week? One person a day? You say, well, should I open up Saturday? I mean, how many times does someone call your office and ask, are you open Saturday? I mean, are you tracking all your no's? You need a pad, a prescription pad, say getting to yes. And every time that girl on the phone has to say no, I need to write down the number. It was Jesse Green. Here's the phone number. Here's exactly what they asked. So the team can sit back and say, why did we're spending 3, 4, 5, 6, 7% on advertising, and then people are calling, but it takes three strangers calling before we get one in the chair because we're saying no 14 times a day. How can we get to saying more yes?
Yeah, look, that's fantastic. And you've touched on a couple of really key themes there. There's been so much value in that conversation. I just want to pick up one particular thread because it's something that's really near and dear to my heart, and that is the concept of patient retention. I love your analogy of the Hoover Dam where you've closed the back door off. It's my view that loss of patients is probably the biggest profit leak in a practice. And in fact, I wrote the whole book about that for that reason. But you know what I envisage, you know, when I'm thinking about patient retention, to me, it's a bit like this. You're going out for dinner with your beautiful wife, but you're checking out the pretty young thing on the table next door, which is, you know, a little bit tacky. And I'm just of the view that if you can take care of your existing patients rather than spending all your focus and all your energy, of course, some of it can be used for attracting new patients, but you've really got to look after those ones that you've got. And as you say, staff retention equals patient retention. They are so closely correlated that it's incredible. So I really just want to echo your thoughts there. There's a trend that's happening here in Australia at the moment. Certainly it's coming up a little bit around, you know, the business owners, practice owners. And that trend at the moment is for some practice owners to be getting into the situation of opening multiple practices. It's, you know, their way of scaling, their way of creating leverage. Do you have a view on that? Does that fall into the overcomplicating things, or do you think it's just something that suits certain people and it works for some and not for others? What's your general thoughts around multiple practices and business models in general?
It's simply insane. I mean, so they already pay rent, mortgage, equipment, bill, like computer, insurance, malpractice, all this stuff for one location that's only open 32 hours a week or 19% of the 168 hours. So what's their best idea? To take that, you already paid the rent, mortgage, and equipment. So instead of using it 32 hours, let's use it 60. Oh, hell no. They want to go 5 miles down the street and get another rent, mortgage, equipment, build that computer. So what they do is they double their overhead, their fixed cost, and then cut their consumerism in half at each location. So I think it's completely insane.
Yeah, look, thank you. I couldn't agree more. I think it's important to max out what you've got. And rather than go and spend another $500,000 on setting up another location, I think for step number one is to really make sure you're maxing out what you've got. You spoke a lot in that previous conversation about data points. And, you know, I'm a fairly data-driven guy. I suspect you are too, Howard. Where do you think the most important data points lie in a practice? And you know, where should practice owners really focus their time in terms of data?
Well, the one thing I'd like to track is how many months or years has your average employee been there? I mean, has your average employee been with you 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years? Number two, dentists always talk about fee for service, but their costs are all based on labor. When I buy my rent and I buy my staff, they're there for this many hours in a day, in a week, in a month. So all my costs are in time and all my billings are in procedure. So I want every check I've written for this office divided by how many days we're in business. And I want a break-even point, a BEP. Some people call it a BAM number, a bare ass minimum. And at the beginning, I want everybody to know what we have to do today to break the bills, pay the bills. Because dentistry, just like the Mexicans won't deliver, but the Chinese will, the dentist healthcare is the most entitled, lazy workers in all of industry. I mean, you go into the hotel industry, you go into the resort industry, cruise ships, those guys, they're either sleeping or working, and they're sleeping 6 hours and they're working all day. And here's what'll happen at a dental office. They come in at 8. And they don't even know what they do to pay their bills. And they're going to lunch at 12 to 1 no matter what. And then 11 o'clock, their big production, their big crown or root canal cancels, and they all sit around and do nothing for an hour. And then after they've done nothing for an hour, then they all go to lunch for an hour because they're just entitled, lazy government healthcare workers. And then at 5 o'clock, maybe they didn't even pay all their bills that day. And at 5 o'clock, someone says, hey, I got a broken tooth. And let's say you had to do $3,000 to pay the bills, and you've done $2,800 for the day, and everybody shuts up and goes home for the day. And you just got to get rid of all people who are entitled, and you got to start going in there at a staff meeting and say, hey, here's the deal. We got a great team. We got a great facility. We got great technology. Everything's great. We're having fun. But how we're doing it cost us $3,000 a day. So what we're going to do is we're going to go out there and we're going to knock out $3,000, and then we're going to go to lunch, and then we're going to come back and do it again. Now, if my day falls apart, if this patient falls apart, and right now we're scheduled lunch from 12 to 1, but we can squeeze in an emergency, a toothache, whatever, who's going with me through lunch? And you got two assistants, and one will say, you know, I'll go through lunch with you because I really need to leave at the end of the day at 5. Maybe she has a kid and you got to do something. The other one says, you know what? I don't have a kid and I like my lunch. But if we need to add something to the day, I'll go long. Sometimes for the month would not be quite right. And the staff will sit there and say, you know, we got some big procedures. We're behind for the month. We've had some cancellation no-shows. Let's blow open Saturday from 8 to 12 and bring in all this high-end stuff. It'd be awesome to come in on Saturday and just dock and three assistants and knock out 12 grand. That'll make our numbers for the month perfect. So what I would say about numbers is the most important thing about numbers is transparency. I go into dental offices and the dentist knows the numbers, but everybody making, you know, if there's five people in the office, if there's a dentist, a hygienist, two assistants and two receptionists, six people, you know, that dentist is probably only making 10-15% of the decisions. You need to get that data in front of everybody so that everybody can make better, faster, higher quality decisions. Everybody knows the breaking point. Furthermore, when I show all my overhead to the staff And, you know, I lump labor into one, but everything else is detail specific. Now you got six people. And I've noticed two types of mentalities in any business. Some people always think, I'm going to grow the business. They're visionaries. They're growers. They're always spending money and growing, growing, growing. Then you get this other half. And they think the easiest dollar earned is a dollar in expenses saved. The easiest second easiest dollar earned is a dollar in taxes delayed. And they're sitting there saying, why are we paying $500 to have our land service deal? I'm going to get three more bids on that and then come back and say, yeah, I just found someone that'll do it for $250. And why are we paying this much on supplies? And when, come on, we were paying this much per crown when the lab bill used to be $3,000. We're still paying that much for a crown. And now our lab bill is $6,000. So natural hardwired at birth. Some people are introverts. Some people are extroverts. Natural hardwired at birth. Some people are spenders and going for it, and other people are penny savers. Some of it's cultural. The biggest joke is that the Scottish are the tightest people, that copper wire was invented when two Scots were fighting over a penny. Some cultures, like the Scots, have both eyes on the easiest dollar earned is a dollar in expenses saved. Some people just want to go, 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 and they're always buying new equipment, all this stuff. So once you get your whole team, and then you're getting educated together, and you're going off-site together at a CE course or a convention, and they're there for the long haul, everybody starts getting long-term, better educated, making better decisions, and your production collection starts going up, your costs start going down, and everything in between is the profit dollar.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. You spoke a bit about culture a few times throughout our conversation today, Howard, and I'm curious because, you know, that's a huge part of the team, obviously the culture that you create, and you've spoken a bit about the sense of entitlement of some of the workers that can occupy a practice. I'm curious to ask how you do it in your practice. You know, how did you create that culture with a specific intent? What did you do in a practical sense to create the culture of the team that you really wanted?
I think what the staff buys into is passion. I think they buy into passion, high energy, enthusiasm. And I go into offices that are barely surviving, and the dentist is the last one there. The dentist is the first out the door. Every time the front desk comes back and says, your next patient canceled, they say, God, thank God. That's proof there is a God. I'm so glad it canceled. I'm out of here. And the dentist that has passion and, you know, and shows that you have purpose. I mean, when I started my dental office, I also thought, well, my dental office is drilling, filling, and billing. I'm living in Phoenix, Arizona, with over 1.5 million people, and they don't even have fluoridated water. So I scheduled 2 hours or 3 hours every Friday for our staff just to work on how could we get Phoenix fluoridated. And that took 2 years. We'd call the city council. There were 8 city councilmen. There was a mayor, Terry Goddard. And it took us, we were so dumb and young, we thought it'd take us, you know, 30 days to get this done. Ended up taking like 2 years. But it gave everybody purpose because we thought, okay, we're not going to practice here from 25 to 75 and nothing changed. We want to make an impact on oral health by closing down patient time and sending your hygienist. Every February is the month of dental hygiene. So we send our hygienists and dentists to the local elementary schools and high schools and middle schools and talk about preventative dentistry. And they realize that I'm not trading time for money. I don't make a red widget and I don't make it for a dollar, sell it for two, and then make a bunch of money. And I can't wait till 5 o'clock to go home when my life starts. This is part of your life. I mean, there's 168 hours in a week. You work 40, you sleep 56. Sure, family is important, but work is 40 hours, sleep is 56, and your family is everything left. And so when you give these people purpose, I mean, that's how we sell dentistry, because we're not trying to sell you a gimmick. We're not trying to trick you. We absolutely want you to do these fillings because we don't want it to go from a $250 filling to a $2,000 root canal billum crown. And then 10%, you know, 5-6% of those fail. Then you need an implant and a crown. And then, you know, a good 20% of them are going to fail from peri-implantitis, you know, 10, 15 years down the road. So when everybody's passionate, everyone has purpose. If you're coming in late for work, I'm not going to fire you and ding you because you're 5 minutes late. What's going to get you fired is because you're late because you don't even care. You're not showing up ready to go. You're not charged. A lot of this social animal, you know, we've lived for 2 million years in a tribe of about 140 people. So you're programmed in biology to get along and smile and obey the 400-pound gorilla and all these stuff. So it's very hard to have an uncomfortable conversation. And what leaders have to do, the best leaders have the most number of uncomfortable conversations where they could just sit there and say, hey, what's keeping you up at night? You know, when you're taking a shower, what are our problems? What, report to me bad news. Now, when your staff sees something bad, are they afraid to go to the leader because the leader's going to cut their head off and, you know, only tell them something good? Tell them a lady sent us a nice card, because if you tell him something bad, he's going to get upset. You got to sit there and reward the people for bringing you bad news. And when you get the bad news, you don't bite their head. Everybody falls down. Everybody makes mistakes. It's a long-term game. The greatest athletes in the world miss the kick, miss the shot. I mean, Michael Jordan talks forever about, I think 38 times the team trusted him enough to take the game-winning shot at the last second, and he missed. And no one said, well, shoot Michael Jordan. I mean, he's no good. It's the greatest people miss the most important shot, and he was just honored that the coach and all the players that they thought they trusted him the most to give the ball. And when he missed it, you know, he didn't get upset and go crazy or nothing like that. So it's about building a culture of purpose and passion. And that's how I answer questions like when dentists say, should I buy a laser? Well, hell, I mean, I can do anything without a laser. You don't need a laser for anything. But if that laser made your eyes sparkle and gave you purpose and passion, and you just wanted to be laser dentist, Star Wars, and that's what made you run 20 red lights on the way to work, I'm saying, dude, you can't afford not to have a laser. It's the same thing with CAD/CAM. The smartest thing you could do is save $150,000, take a $12 impression with 3M Emper gum, send it to your lab man down the street and make a crown for $100, cement it 2 weeks later. That's the smartest thing. People say, well, the patient wants same day crown. Dude, I've been a dentist 29 years. When I tell someone they need a crown, half the questions are, oh my God, how much is it? 1,000? I don't get paid till Friday. Do you take my insurance, my credit card? And then the other half are on pain. Are you going to give me a shot? Can you knock me out? Is it nitrous? Or then maybe what is it going to look like? I get like one person a decade that says, you know what's most important to me? Is that I get it in the same day. Okay, so this is and the person telling you that, I bet you anything, was riding a unicorn in your mind, okay? But if you thought CAD/CAM was the coolest thing in the world, and you just look at that machine, and there's just saliva drooling all over your shirt, and you're just like, your heart is racing, and you just want to make love to that machine, then hell yeah, you got to buy it. You got to buy it. My four boys, when I put them in the sandbox with no toys, they were out in 5 minutes. But if I threw in a bunch of Tonka trucks and pails and shovels, they'd stay there all day. Same thing in the bathtub. Put them in the bathtub. By the time you get the fourth one in, the first one was already crawled out. But you throw in a bunch of boats and balls and stuff, and they'd stay in there until their skin got all wrinkly. And you want to drive to work. And you say, I can't wait to get to work to see Susan and Shawanda. God, I love them. I wonder how their last night went, blah, blah. But if you're driving to work thinking, oh, my God, my hygienist, I swear to God, the only reason she's alive is because it's illegal to shoot her, then why are you paying her money? You only want to work with the people that you want to work with. You want to do the procedures you want to do. It's the same thing with specialty. A lot of dental students say, well, do you think it should be a periodontist? And I say, well, what are you thinking? They go, well, is that a better job? Dude, you should only want to go into a specialty program if that's what you want to do. Don't think about the numbers. I mean, if you just sit there and say, God, all I want to be is a pediatric dentist, I'd say, first of all, you're insane. Your mom probably dropped you on your head when you were little, never told you. Anybody who wants to spend their life with crying children probably is addicted to Xanax.
There's a special place in heaven for pediatric dentists, so I think.
My God. When they tell me they want to do it, I don't know whether to laugh or cry. But the ones that do it, they do it because they love it. They didn't do it because they say, well, I'll have a higher return on asset and a higher return on equity, so I'm going to become a pediatric. No, you do things because you want to. You love it. You like it. You hire people that you want to be with. And when you start doing things you hate for money, it leads to depression, substance abuse, alcohol, eating Vicodin. There's a reason 90% of prostitutes are heroin addicts, because they hate their job. They do things they hate for money. I see it in dentistry. They do procedures they hate. I know people say, I say, what do you hate the most about dentistry? And they say, I'd rather be taken in the backyard and beat with a belt than do a root canal. I'm like, have you not heard of endodontist? And they say, well, I have to because it's $1,000 and insurance pays $800. Dude, if you're doing endo and you hate it, at the end of the day, at the end of the month, at the end of your career, overall, you have lost money. You'll have retired too early. You might have started cutting back your hours. You might have started drinking. You went south because you traded time for money doing something you hate. So you only live once. I don't care how big your house is now. Everyone's going to be put in the same little cremation vase, you know, the size of a bottle of beer. So if we're all going to end up in the same bottle of beer vase crematory, while you're here on Earth, you ought to just have fun.
Look, I think that is actually, for anyone listening there, that is some of the best career advice I think I've ever heard, is do what you love. Obviously, you know, doing things for money is just, it's a quick road to misery. So really, really insightful conversation, mate. I enjoyed that a lot. I just want to, as we start to come to the end of the conversation, I want to just to put on a crystal ball for a second, because I want to be thinking a little bit at where you see the opportunities for dentists and dental practice as we move forward. We've touched on social media. We've touched on some of the technology revolution. Where do you see, you know, if I'm, let me just paint a picture. I'm, you know, a 35-year-old dentist. I'm in my own practice. Things are going along pretty well. But, you know, the times are changing. Where do you see some of the opportunities coming up? And equally, where do you see some of the challenges? And what sort of things would you be, you know, advising those guys in that scenario?
I would advise that, number one, that the old guys can smell bleeding edge versus leading edge. So, like, when I got out of school, all the gurus were saying, you know, if it's a pretty lady, do Dicors and cement them with Duralon. And I did like 1,000 of those. Guess how many of those broke and had to be replaced?
Oh, I don't know how many.
All 1,000. And then you know, Horaeus Kölzer comes out with Art Glass, and it delaminated and was large lawsuits. Williams Ibeclair came out with Targus Vectoris, and I don't know what Targus means. I don't know what Vectoris means, but I know they hated each other and came apart, and it was a disaster. So, like right now, Megagen's got this grinder. I mean, it's just amazing. So when you extract the tooth, you throw it in there, it pulverizes it, and makes all this bone grafting. It looks like the last scene in that Nebraska movie, Fargo. You know, the last scene of that movie, yeah, Fargo, where yeah. She puts her husband in the wood chipper. But you know what? It might be the greatest idea in the world, but it might be the biggest disaster. Maybe when you grind up enamel and dentin and cementum and bacteria and pulp, that down the road, it ruins the whole thing. So I would avoid bleeding edge, because right now, when older guys like me see that Megagen Fargo pulverizer, we're all like, oh man, we can't wait till a bunch of dumbass kids between 25 and 30 try that for 3 or 4 years and see if that works. And if it works from bleeding edge to leading edge, I'm going to try it. I don't want to try the 8th generation bonding edge. I've been burned so many times by corporate dentistry to where all their R&D is done in the marketing department. And then if it works, they keep selling it. If it doesn't work, they just quietly discontinue the product. Then also supply and demand. I think the biggest changes are demographics. Go where they ain't. It's supply and demand. So everybody in Australia says, I got an idea. I'm going to build a dental office so that when you look out the window, you see the opera house. Dude, that's the least original idea in the planet. There are towns of 1,500, 2,500 people out in the middle of the outback that don't even have a dentist, and the dentists that go there just crush it. Look at hospitals. Hospitals have got to be the craziest place in all of healthcare. You can walk in there with a brain tumor, they can remove it. You can walk in there and they can do a heart transplant, a bypass, and amputate your leg. But 8% of their emergencies are dental related, and they can't do a root canal extraction. All they can do is give them an opioid and antibiotics. And America is now up to almost more people die from opioid overdose than they do in car wrecks. It's like 30,000 in cars, 35,000 opioids. I would set up a dental office in hospitals. I would go up there in an emergency room, and I'd track all the hospitals and say, I mean, these average hospitals, I mean, it's crazy. It's 8%. 8% of their new patient flow. And then where's the dentist going to go? He's going to go build a $1 million practice overlooking the opera house. Supply and demand. There's no demand there. So he goes and barrels down $1 million of supply. He could have put a building in the hospital parking lot. He could have leased 1,000 square feet in the hospital. He could have said, you know, instead of taking an hour drive from the suburbs downtown Sydney by the Opera House, now I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to drive an hour out of town where I found this small village of 1,500 people that don't even have a dentist, where I don't even need to take insurance, where there'll never be corporate dentistry, and charge all the fees I want because I'm the only supply in town.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice as well. Howard, I'm curious just to dive a little bit into the people who have influenced you most. As we wrap up, I want to try and get inside the head of Howard Foran a little bit. Who do you think are the people, either personally or in business, who have had the most profound impact on your life? Obviously, you're really well regarded in the profession and the industry more broadly. You've created Dental Town, which is probably the world's largest dental community. You've done a lot of stuff. So I'm guessing there's been some people who have guided you, influenced you along the way. Who have been the people who have had the most impact on your life?
I would say that all leaders are readers and that all my best friends are dead. I mean, Thomas Watson Jr.'s book, The Making of IBM, Ray Kroc, Grinding It Out, The Making of McDonald's. My Years with General Motors by Alfred Sloan. Bill Gates, The Road Ahead, you know, How to Become an Overnight Success in 30 Years. I just love Morgan, Arm and Hammer. I mean, God, even political leaders where you read about Truman or Roosevelt or leading people. Anthropology is huge. Anthropology, when you go to the zoo, the only animal with clothes on is sapien, and they think they're all that, and they're not all that. They're not much different than a gorilla, a chimpanzee, orangutan, a bonobos. They're a monkey without a tail. And so reading anthropology, sociology, history always repeats itself. I'm just always, always reading a book. I mean, Pulitzer Prize winning books, Guns, Germs, and Stills, and that guy just wrote another one that should get another Pulitzer Prize called Sapien. So I would say when you're standing in a room and you're the smartest person in your room, we go back to that 140 people in your family. When you're at the big family dinner on Sunday and you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. So what are you going to do? Walk across the street and see those 140? I mean, the greatest minds that ever existed, most all of them are dead, but captured in an autobiography somewhere. And today, if you don't like to read, now you have like your book. I mean, your book is amazing. My gosh, Retention, How to Plug the Profit Leak in Your Dental Practice. You can listen to that on an audiobook while you go on your morning walk for an hour, or while you're on a treadmill or on your commute to work. I mean, this podcast show right now, how many people? And, I congratulate everyone listening to your podcast right now, because instead of listening to radio about politics and war and religion and all these crazy things that, I think the presidential election in the United States, it's so crazy, because at the end of the day, nothing's going to change, period. Nothing will change. And all the hours they watched all those debates and all the arguments they got in with all their friends, they could have gone down to their dental office and done another root canal. They could have taken their staff to a continuing education course. And, you're always – Sapien is a judgmental animal, and he's always looking at you, judging you because you didn't do this right or that right. They never want to look in the mirror. And when I look at dentists talking and business people talking about politics, I go, man, if you've got nothing better to talk about than politics, that means you probably have never looked in the mirror, because I bet you – who wins the White House or the president or the prime minister will have almost zero impact on your life. But I bet you, the one looking in the mirror, probably makes 20 bad decisions a day. So I wouldn't worry about who the prime minister had an affair with or who deleted her email or all that. I'd ask yourself, why did you do that today? Why did you not take that CE course? When Sharon walked in 20 minutes late, why did you not confront her? Why could you not have an uncomfortable conversation? How come you told that lady you could do a filling when you know she should have done this or that? Why did you diagnose one tooth instead of just sitting back and diagnosing the whole mouth? Why are you a one-tooth dentist? Why aren't you a quadrant dentist or a full-mouth dentist? Why, just keep your eye on the man in the mirror. And if you put all your faith and time and energy of trying to make that man a little better, I mean, it was that famous Chinese legend who said, it's easier to conquer another man's army than it is to conquer oneself. So quit judging others and getting wrapped up in things that have no control of your life, and quit having 3-hour conversations about whether Putin should be in the Ukraine or the Palestinian issue and all that stuff. And go back to your tribe. Go back to your office. Lead these people. Get a vision for them. Get an optimistic, purpose-filled, fun-filled vision, and lead your team long-term. Get them super educated so they can have long-lasting, trusting relationships with your clientele, and you'll be happy and prosperous.
Howard, that is absolutely wonderful advice. I really thank you for that, for the whole conversation, but particularly that last bit of advice to round things out, because ultimately, you know, the only person that we can change is ourselves. And I think that's probably where we should spend our energy. I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you, Howard, for, I know it's the weekend in America at the moment, and I wanted to say thank you for taking time away from your family to spend some time with our family, the podcast family. And you've been really, really generous with your insights, really generous with your knowledge. And from all of us here in Australia and the other countries this podcast extends to, thanks so much for taking the time out. You've been really wonderful.
Hey, the honor and privilege was all mine. If you ever want to do it again, it'd be an honor.
Thanks, Howard. I might just take you up on that. That'd be terrific.
And next time I come down and see my brother in Sydney, you're in Canberra?
I am in Canberra. It's a short drive away, a couple of hours, but I get to Sydney regularly. So next time you're in town, let me know and I'll definitely come up and see you.
Actually, it would be more fun. I see my brother every year. I'm coming back. When are we going back, Ryan? In June? July? You know, it'd actually be more fun. I'm going to get my brother to drive me to your house. Can I drive out of Sydney and yep. see your city and have a beer with you in Canberra?
You can absolutely do that. Let me know. Okay. And I will make it my mission to take you around town and I'll show you the best ales that we have.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire on that one.
You better. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Have a rocking hot day.
You too. Thanks so much, Howard.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.